Before we begin, I'd like to emphasize that this podcast is an extension of my surgical work and research at Visionary Eye Doctors, and thank you all for tuning in every week or multiple times to kind of hear about our research and how we help patients. And thank you to all of you who have flown in from all over the world to see us here, so I'm very humbled by that. So it is my hope and desire to keep this information free to all of you, especially to my dear patients. And in keeping with this mission, we are very thankful to our first sponsor for this podcast, Wizard Dry Eye Mask. Many of you have heard me talk about the Wizard before. I have loved this product for years. It looks like this. I have one right next to my bed. So does my husband. I used mine last night. And even, you know, if I can't sleep, I'll use it. It's a wonderful product that you just plug in next to your bed or even at your computer. I've been known, if I start to develop a sty, to do the Wizard as I type and then switch, you know, if I have warm, just like a warm compress. So it works wonderful for that. So thank you to the Wizard. If you mention our name, podcast, Visionary Eye Doctors, Dr. Kramer's, they'll give you a 1-year guarantee. If anything happens to the product, just call them up and they'll replace it for you for free. So thank you to the Wizard Research team for sponsoring this podcast. Enjoy. Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Sandy Laura Kramers. Thank you for joining us for the EYE Show podcast. Thank you for all of you that have subscribed, have come visit us in our Rockville office in Maryland in the United States of America, and for those patients that have traveled the world to see us. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for passing this on to friends and family. Today, we're going to talk about doxycycline. It's a medication. Technically, it's considered an antibiotic, but it actually has another effect on the body that we love because it can decrease inflammation. And so the first time I heard about doxycycline was, of course, as a medical student. It was considered a wonderful antibiotic that would be used to treat all types of tick-borne illnesses, things like granuloma diseases, venereal diseases, certain bacterial diseases, and even the kind of mites and tick-borne illnesses that people would get. But then when I was in Harvard at Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary, I heard Dr. Judah Folkman speak about the anti-inflammatory component of doxycycline in a very particular way. And so if you look up on PubMed, Dr. Judah Folkman and doxycycline, you'll see many papers that he's published on the effect it has with things like trachoma, and not just from the antibiotic component, but from the anti-inflammatory component. And so most disease processes, such as from a bacteria or virus or a tick, have that kind of infective component. And if it's not treated, there's an inflammatory component that can lead to scar tissue. And what he said was when we use doxycycline, which is a tetracycline derivative, it was first kind of developed by Dr. Benjamin Duggar, I think in the 1800s. And then the doxycycline version was patented in 1962, I believe, as an antibiotic. It usually is working at that kind of molecular level of the, where basically the mRNA attaches to the actual product of the ribosome. And so it works pretty effectively as an anti-infective, antibacterial medication at 100 milligrams twice a day. Some people will use it 200 milligrams, sometimes twice a day, most often 100 milligrams twice a day or 50 milligrams twice a day as an antibiotic. He noted, however, that doxycycline is a very rare type of medication that when you use it as a lower dose, 20 milligrams, he said, was the best, and that's what his papers have shown. It works as an anti-inflammatory, and it does not have any antibacterial effect. And that has come out to be shown in multiple papers in terms of how it affects the gut flora. For instance, if you take doxycycline 100 milligrams twice a day, you'll affect your gut flora. We'll tell people to take probiotics with that or any antibiotic. If you take it at 20 milligrams, there's been now two studies that show it does not affect your gut flora, and the chance of having GI upset or some type of issues where you have a super infection because you've affected your gut flora is close to zero. It's not zero, but it's probably close to zero. And so 20 milligrams once a day is enough to decrease the inflammatory component of many disease processes such as ocular rosacea, trachoma, and other disease processes, including, he said, cancer. So at Harvard, he said all his cancer patients were on 20 milligrams of doxy every day, and I still think that's the protocol at Harvard because it decreases angiogenesis. And angiogenesis, like we talked about before, is where new blood vessels start to grow, usually from a signal of a lack of oxygen or some type of stimulus. And in cancer cells, it's a mutation in the cell DNA that leads to the replication of the cell. And then the cell starts to recruit its own blood vessel supply. Just like if you're an army of people in a camp, you need to start getting more and more food, and you're going to get more trucks and roads and things to get those channels of food into your army, into your little conclave, so you can grow. The same way the cancer cell grows. And if the tumor can recruit its own blood supply through a molecule called vascular endothelial growth factor, which is VEGF, it will create those new channels, which is essentially angiogenesis. Angio is blood vessels, genesis is the creation of, so angiogenesis is the creation of new blood vessels. So this molecule called VEGF will create those new blood vessels, and doxycycline destroys, or decreases, I should say, it actually, I think it does destroy, but it decreases the ability of the cell and the body to create more VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor, and create those new channels of blood supply. So it limits cell, abnormal cell growth. And that's why they use it at Harvard for cancer patients. In terms of what we see in the eye world, we see a lot of inflammation and we see a lot of patients with rosacea. And rosacea, again, is usually, we think, a genetic mutation. We think it's somehow connected to a European descendant. There's now multiple genes implicated in the process where we can see blood vessels on the surface of the skin if it's a dermatological component. And there's different kind of categories of rosacea. Pustular types and all kinds of things. Of course, as an ophthalmologist, as an eye surgeon, I care about the ocular component. And so what we see under the microscope is red blood vessels going over the meibomian gland orifice at the base of the eyelid. There's a little orifice where each oil gland produces and excretes its oil. And if we see a red blood vessel going over that, usually a few of them, we consider the diagnosis of ocular rosacea. And as I mentioned before, the only way to know 100% for sure is to take a biopsy or a punch biopsy and look under the microscope. We don't do that because we don't want to leave patients with scars along their eyelid margin or even their face. But it's a clinical diagnosis where we look under the microscope and we can see these blood vessels. And you can have rosacea even if you're dark as my scrubs, dark African American or Hispanic, Asian, Indian. And of course, Caucasians, many people can have rosacea. And so the theory behind rosacea is that you have a gene for inflammation, and then your epigenetics and your environment can turn on that gene. So let's say nobody in your family ever had any history of rosacea, but you do. Well, could it be maybe you had a sunburn as a kid, or you were in the sun a lot as a kid, or your diet has more inflammatory factors, or you were some type of injury where you had more inflammation in your body, or a kind of virus or mite or tick-borne illness that turned on that inflammatory gene? It's possible. And I haven't seen that particularly published, but that is a theory that I had it with Dr. Folkman and some other doctors have talked about, the turning on of the rosacea gene. So we have a lot of patients that we see, red nose, red cheeks, red eyelid margin, that is inflammation. Anytime you see redness that's abnormal, there's an inflammatory component there. Whether it's a sunburn on your face or your skin, or it's, you know, the eyelid that's getting red, there's an inflammatory component. And rosacea is a particular type of gene that turns on the inflammatory component more. And so doxycycline tries to decrease that inflammatory effect. And so let me talk a little bit of exactly how doxycycline does this. So again, if you're on doxycycline, if your doctor gives you doxycycline and they're trying to treat redness or a sty, we, for instance, will use doxycycline at 100 milligrams twice a day. If you have a very infected sty, it's very inflamed, red, painful, we're trying to avoid something called preseptal cellulitis, where it starts to, you know, spread on your skin, or orbital cellulitis, where it actually goes into the back of your orbit, which can happen because your eyelid is close to your brain, and that can be dangerous. But if the sty has been there for more than 2 weeks, it's not tender, we're trying to to decrease the inflammatory component, because a sty, if left untreated, becomes a scar. And that process from infection to scar tissue, there's a connection called inflammation. And that's where doxycycline works, is to decrease inflammation. And that's good generally, I think, for the whole body. You have heard me say many times, I'm a proponent of natural ways to decrease inflammation, specifically going, you know, decreasing your gluten, sugar, dairy, ideally gluten-free, sugar-free, dairy-free. I try to follow that diet. A lot of my friends try to follow that diet. A lot of my surgical friends try to follow that diet, because inflammation is how our cells die, and that's how we die. Inflammation, of course, you can, you know, say more about that, but that's generally the punchline, is cells die often from trauma, infection, and of course, the general thing is inflammation. And so anything we can do to decrease inflammation, prayer, meditation, exercise, sleep, smiling, all the social things you'll hear me talk about in different podcasts, those kinds of things we think decrease inflammation, but we have hard data on doxycycline in particular. Now, I think diet does decrease, good diets decrease inflammation, and it's more kind of harder to prove, but doxy, we have a lot of data. So let me go through a little bit of the data for those of you that want to continue listening to this, I think, very interesting component. And so doxycycline basically inhibits what is called metalloproteinases, or MMPs, which are involved in basically this zinc-dependent multi-domain endopeptidases, excuse me if I'm reading, but basically what they're doing is increasing inflammation. So doxycycline inhibits MMP2, MMP3, MMP8, MMP9, and MMP13. So it does all of these. And breast cancer cell cultures, so we're talking about breast cancer, express MMP2. And because doxycycline inhibits MMP2, that's where Dr. Folkman started to realize, well, that actually might be helpful for cancer patients because of its effect on MMP2. Which can affect breast cancer growth, in particular to breast cancer, but they use it in all types of cancers. Because it does inhibit MMP3 in fibroblasts, neurons, and endothelial cells, doxycycline can help rosacea, for instance, because it's a growth of these blood vessels that have endothelial cells and fibroblasts, which cause scar tissue. And it can also help patients that have things like dermal fibrosis, periodontitis, so gum disease. Dentists will use Oracea, which is a brand name, much more expensive than just generic 20 milligrams of doxycycline, which are pretty similar. And doxycycline, there's two different types of hyclate and monohydrate. There's differences in them, and I think they're roughly about the same. So whatever the insurance will cover is what we recommend. But I know some doctors recommend more one than the other. Minocycline is a tetracycline derivative, which can also work, but I prefer doxy only because I have personally seen some patients with optic neuritis with minocycline, and that's an inflammatory condition caused by high-dose minocycline in women that eventually caused issues with vision. I've never seen that with doxycycline. So the people that should not have doxycycline, even 20 milligrams, is children, although I would have to say it's probably less likely to cause difficult, like coloring of the teeth. Pregnant women, we generally won't give doxycycline, and anyone who has an allergic reaction to doxycycline or tetracycline or has had any type of issues like Stevens-Johnson's, which has not been reported that I know of with 20 milligrams of doxycycline, but it's been reported with 100 milligrams of doxycycline. And Stevens-Johnson's disease is one of those diseases that we dread in the sense that it's an immune reaction of your own body to a medication. It can happen with aspirin, Advil, ibuprofen, I should say, any of the medications, antibiotics. It's just kind of like, we don't understand why it happens to some people yet, but it can devastate the eye and the mucous membranes because it's an inflammatory condition that leads to a rapid scar tissue in the mucous membranes that can be devastating for pain, symptoms, vision loss, dryness all over the body. So we try to obviously avoid medications like that, but sometimes we need to use, of course, aspirin or ibuprofen or doxycycline high dose. I haven't seen it reported in 20 milligrams of doxycycline, but that's just something that I prefer to use doxy and cycline and not minocycline for that reason. Okay, and then a couple of other things let me just tell you about in terms of the effect that we do tell people to try to avoid taking calcium or any type of magnesium when you take these medications if it's at 100 milligrams twice a day. When it's 20 milligrams, so when you get your prescription, if it says 100 milligrams and it's for a bacterial disease, let's say, so if you have like a venereal disease, some people will use 100, will give 100 milligrams twice a day, we'll tell you to avoid it, don't eat it with food, take it on an empty stomach. But that can cause more gastrointestinal disruptions. You have to you know, be aware of that. 20 milligrams a day is not affected by the food you eat. So you can have it with food, even with calcium. It's working differently. So it's not as sensitive to the calcium and other things you'll have in your food. So just to be aware of that. And then the last thing I want to just talk about a little bit is the long-term use of doxycycline. So we'll generally use doxycycline through the whole year for patients that have no side effects from it. And it's very rare to have a side effect from 20 milligrams of doxycycline. I think I've had one patient have a stomach upset with it, even with food. Very rare. I think I've had one patient say they had a UTI when they were on it, but that's really, really rare. One in maybe more than 1,000. And the other things that we will tell patients, if there's any concern if you could get a sunburn, if you're going to be in the sun, we will definitely have people stop their high dose doxycycline because that can make you more photosensitive to the sun. 20 milligrams, it's very rare to be photosensitive. We haven't seen any patients have that so far. So patients that are about to have intense pulse light, for instance, can continue on the doxycycline. There's been at least one paper to show that it's relatively safe. I've seen no patients have any photosensitivity while on doxycycline 20 milligrams and having intense pulse light. I still always recommend patients to stay out of the UV sun rays because that increases inflammation of your skin, and that's what we're trying to obviously avoid. But if you're going to go to Miami, I don't make patients stop their 20 milligrams of doxycycline usually. If you get pregnant, I make patients stop everything because it's considered category C, which means it hasn't been investigated for in utero babies or mothers that are breastfeeding. So we'll tell moms to stop the doxy if they plan to get pregnant or they're breastfeeding, we won't give it to them. Okay, let me just mention a couple more things which I also find interesting. And doxycycline inhibits something called MCP1, which is also involved in neutrophil migration of the pulmonary system and aortic epithelium, which can help healing of those organs, so the lung disease or aortic issues, it'll be used for that. It has been used to help in patients with osteoarthritis, which is interesting. And then just to mention, it has also been used in, of course, acne, rosacea, pemphigoid, dermatitis of all sorts, dermatoses, sarcoidosis, bacillary angiomatosis, Kaposi sarcoma, urticaria, where you have tons of itching, mast cell syndrome. So it does work in all these things. Different dosages will, you know, you'll use from time to time, but it's quite interesting to hear how the doxy does have those two components. So the antibiotic component and the anti-inflammatory component. So I hope you found this helpful. A lot of patients are always scared to start a pill, and I understand that because I don't like to take pills myself. But if you have rosacea, I highly recommend taking doxycycline 20 milligrams if you have no risk of allergies to it, and you can just give it a try. I haven't seen anyone have a negative reaction to the 20 that's life-threatening, for instance. But if you have, please let me know. I'd like to include that in the podcast, but I haven't heard that in the world literature yet. If you have rosacea, you know you have an inflammatory gene. Part of my research at Harvard was to show the connection between rosacea and cancer. And so anything that decreases your risk of cancer, such as low inflammatory diet, Dr. Longo's diet, intermittent fasting, exercise, prayer, meditation, sleeping, and doxycycline, 20 milligrams, I think is not a bad idea. And so just talk to your medical doctor, of course, to see if that's something that you should consider. Look at Dr. Judah Folkman's research on doxycycline if you want more information. I hope you found this podcast helpful. Please pass it on to friends and family, and thank you all for subscribing and tuning in. Have a great day.